Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker McBride here, joined as always by Matt Wasko, my good friend and co-host. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I thought we should kind of chat about that game last week.
Yeah, so we neglected to give our predictions.
We did.
Of the Chiefs versus Cincinnati Bengals last Sunday afternoon. But the Chiefs did prevail.
They did.
They came out on top last second, clutch field goal by Harrison Butker to win by three.
Yeah, the guy was at the center of major controversy, wins the day.
Exactly.
Yeah, so no, that game was pretty intense. You know, when it's your team, you hate to be on the side that the team that's driving, you know, could take it away from you. You'd rather, you know, have a comfortable lead. But the fact that, you know, once you come out of the other side of that intense moment, then it's like, then it's fun, right? But during the, I remember when I was playing sports, if we had a, as an athlete, I'd like to win comfortably. You know,
yeah.
But you know, you have to. When I had be in situations where you're like, it's you're by a hair or by a nose, whatever, and you're giving it everything you can, and you either win it or you don't. It's more exciting for everybody else.
It was very exciting. They found a way to make both of the first two games very exciting.
Yeah, right.
And that is the one thing. About the last few years and their tremendous success is that they've figured out how to win the close games. They figured out how to get it done when it matters in crunch time, you know, last 2 minutes, which going back to, you know, when the New England Patriots had their dynasty back a few years ago, that was what they always did, right? Tom Brady and Belichick, they always find a way to win in the last couple of minutes.
Right.
No matter what. And that's kind of what the Chiefs got going right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that has been interesting is that I talked to some non-Chiefs fans, and they're saying, oh, we understand that we're going to have to beat the Chiefs by 20 because if it's close, the refs are going to give it to them. I've heard that more times than I can count, that you know, people that are – I have a friend of mine that's a Baltimore Raven fan, and he goes, well, I just understand that we're going to have to win by 20 because close games, the refs are always going to give it to you guys. So perception and reality don't always mix.
Well, you know, this is a common thing in life. When stuff, when something doesn't go the way somebody wants it to go, a lot of times they'll come up with excuses for why. And so instead of just saying, yeah, my team lost and your team won, they want to say, oh, it's the refs or it's this or it's that, find excuses. But, you know, I mean, calls go your way, calls don't go your way, it usually pretty well balances out.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I don't think they get that many special calls.
Right. So how old's the baby now?
The baby, he will be 4 months on the 23rd. Let's see, the 23rd is coming up in 2 days.
Yes.
So he'll be 4 months old in 2 days.
And what's the sleep schedule like right now?
It's actually been going pretty well. The last week or two, got some teeth coming in, so it's been a little more rocky, but for a while he was really getting down to sleeping all night. So,
okay,
you know, once his teeth come in, hopefully he's back to that.
So does that mean you're starting to sleep through the night?
Oh yeah, you know, getting to sleep pretty well through the night.
So nice. Well, that leads right into our study.
That is true. Fit Focus / topic of the day, sleep.
Yeah.
Matt, what do we got about sleep?
Well, I think we should, these are some studies that we pulled up. I think what we should talk about first is what we usually tell people in the gym about sleep. And, you know, usually when I'm training, I've always prioritized sleep above nutrition and working out. And the reason is that I've found in my own experience is that when I'm sleep deprived, I don't eat as well, or it's harder to eat healthy. My discipline isn't as good, which means your cognitive function isn't as good. And the body hasn't had time to rest, so your gains in the gym are mitigated. So I tell people, first and foremost, that, sleep is paramount. You have to get good sleep. I have a sleep stack that I've been passing out for the last 2 years, and I've given it to probably 50 people. Had good results from it, especially from people that have tried a lot of different things and have been successful. They notice the effects of, natural ingredients. Any natural ingredient, there has to be a compound effect. It's not going to be like always overnight. It has to build up in your system, unlike, petroleum drugs that'll, hit you that night and, you're out. But then, but anyway, the point is that I put it at a high priority, and we're going to find out in these studies that they have more of a balanced view of it. I was curious what your take on it was.
I'm right there with you. I learned at an early age the importance of sleep. My performance in the gym would suffer when my sleep suffered.
Right.
Always. And yeah, it's not something that you take care of after the fact. It's not secondary. It's not, okay, everything else is in line, then I think about my sleep. It has to come first. It has to be priority, because if you don't have the right sleep, your body is not going to be able to be healthy.
Right.
And so if you don't have that, not that there's no point in focusing on the other things, but like you said, it's going to be significantly mitigated.
Right. I have a couple of things here that I pulled out of these studies, and they're kind of bullet points, we have like 5 different studies, so we pulled from all of them. There is an association of one study that talks about the effects of activity mitigate the lack of sleep. So kind of like the reverse.
Yeah.
And so I found that interesting, and I've definitely... I will say that I had a recent experience of that where I didn't sleep very good last night. And when I finally got here, I was so tired. I didn't want to work out. I was like, I don't want to work out. But I got going, and during the exercise, I really got into it. My metabolism went up, my energy levels went up. So I can say that happened, right? But in general, a lot of times you don't really... The other thing that's dangerous, especially if it's chronic loss of sleep, I saw, and I don't think it's in these studies, but I saw the other day that if you have 25 days in a year where you have slept, or you have not been asleep between 10 and 4 a.m., 10 p.m. to 4 a.m., and you've cut at least 2 hours out of that, and there's at least 25 days in a year that you've done that, that means your circadian rhythm is out of whack. And you're considered sleep deprived. And so when that happens, you have cognitive issues. You have, which is translates when you have cognitive, you can't make decisions as well. And you can get injured. And this is a health and fitness podcast, in the light of, that affects every aspect, driving and everything. But, thinking about people making dumb mistakes, I had a situation about 3 years ago that you knew about because we've talked about it. And, this is something that can happen. It's like sometimes when we're so sleep deprived, we make decisions in the gym that seem to defy reason, right? I had a young lady who... most she'd ever squatted on the Smith machine was 95 pounds. And one day she was in the gym and she was squatting 75 pounds. She did her 10 reps and then calmly, not like thinking about it, not like, trying to like, should I do this? Should I not? Calmly put on 290 pounds and, proceeded to lift the bar up, and then it just came down, cracked her back, had to put a rod in her back. It was a very serious situation. And so the question is why did that happen? You know, what, you've never done that much weight before in your life by almost four times, and you just calmly put 290 on there. You've never done over 100, and you now you have a life-changing event in your life, because most likely this person was sleep-deprived. You know, I mean, that could play into it. Anyway, the point is like, you tend to make mistakes in the gym. Like, one, I know there's been times when I've put weight on one side of the bar, but not the other, and forgot. And I go to lift the bar, and I fortunately catch it. But it's these things happen when you're sleep deprived. You can't reason as well. You can't cognitively function as well.
Yeah, I would agree. Sleep deprivation is definitely going to be a big factor in decision making, making critical mistakes, not just in the gym, but in life in general. I think a lot of car accidents happen as a result of sleep deprivation. I mean, people like fall asleep while driving and wreck, you know, sometimes. And so anytime we're doing anything of any importance, we want to be fully rested, have our full sleep. And I would say, so I want to ask you this question, Matt. When I think about sleep deprivation, I break it down into kind of two categories. One category is I just don't sleep enough, right? This is the person who maybe they are working multiple jobs, or they just have an extremely busy life, and they've got to be up at, you know, 5 a.m. to start their day, but then they don't get done and end their day and get to bed till midnight or 1 a.m. or something like that. That is like sleep deprivation, that they don't take enough time to sleep. Then there's the other category that is I try to go to bed on time. I, you know, lay down at 9 p.m. and I get up at 6 a.m. I do that every day, but I don't get sleep, or I don't get quality sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like insomnia, I think, you know, is kind of the term used for that, where you can't sleep. It's not that you're just not sleeping, but you actually can't when you lay down and try to sleep.
Right.
And I think, you know, we should probably kind of unpack the difference there.
Between quality of sleep and can't getting to sleep?
Between not getting enough sleep because you aren't going to sleep, or not getting enough sleep because you're trying but you can't.
Okay, so the trying because you can't usually means the rhythm is off, right? And that's usually because they've made too many choices to stay up late, and the brain can't shut off. Your brain is, but if you practice shutting your brain off at like starting at 9:30 or 10 at night, then the brain's going to have an easier time going to sleep.
It gets in a routine. It's used to it.
Right.
Yeah. And in your body, you know, you can change your, there's been studies showing you can change your circadian rhythm around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you work nights for years on end, like your body will get used to sleeping during the day. But generally speaking, we all kind of come pre-programmed with a circadian rhythm of overnight,
right,
when it's dark out, because
right,
that's like historically how humans have always done it, is you sleep at night and you're awake during the day, during the daylight. And so breaking out of that mold, in my opinion, is not advised. I've always tried to follow, well, not always, but since I've been more conscious about my sleep patterns, have always tried to follow that circadian rhythm, natural flow. Hey, when it's getting dark at night, that's when I'm starting to kind of wind down, and I want to be going to sleep not too long after it gets dark, you know, and then I want to sleep while it's dark. And then I want to, you know, get up early in the morning, maybe either right before daylight or right as daylight is happening. And I kind of follow that rhythm. And that's the most natural rhythm for your body to follow and fall into a habit of.
Right.
There's also been a lot of studies show that you need to keep it the same every day. Because if you're, you know, if you're one day you're going to bed at 9 and getting up at 5, and then the next day you go to bed at 1 a.m. and get up at 9 a.m., you're getting 8 hours both times, but because your time of day is switching, your sleep quality is going to go down significantly.
Significantly. Yeah, I've noticed that. There's just in the last week, I had a night where I didn't fall asleep till like 1 or 2 in the morning. And then I think that was on a I know when it was. It was last Saturday when I was running a little bit behind. And I went to bed at like 1 or 2 in the morning, and I just couldn't sleep. And I think I slept in till about 8 that morning. It's not the same. I got 6 hours, but it's not the same, because if you keep moving that sleep period around during the day, the body is not going to sleep as heavily during, let's say, during the day when you usually sleep at night.
Yeah.
Then, you know, when you sleep at night. So, you know, that's the thing, is like, one, being able to fall asleep quickly. Two, having a deep sleep. The deeper I sleep, the more refreshed I feel. And I've mentioned this in the past, when I take magnesium, I do sleep deeper than...
I would agree. Yeah. I've tried that.
Yeah. So, and so I'm a fan of taking magnesium, because I just have a such better quality sleep.
Yeah.
There was one of these studies that I think has a bullet point, and this is from Sleep, Athletic Performance, and Recovery. And this in some ways kind of correlates a lot to not only life, but also what we do in the gym. You know, this is talking about team sports, but everything is across the board. So, you know, inhibits ability. So in a study of male team sports athletes who were sleep deprived, the average total sprint times decreased. So there's an association, again, with the body doesn't perform as well at its peak level, right? If you're sleep deprived, you ain't going to... I remember it wasn't too long ago, I came in sleep deprived on a morning, and benches I've hit in the past that were not that big of a problem with, I couldn't hit because I was exhausted, right? Because I didn't sleep. So it's important for the muscles. It's important for your organs. Everything needs time to shut down and refresh itself. Even at the cellular level. So, you know, it's after sleep deprivation, athletes, you know, they have decreased severe accuracy. They can't, your ability to, you know, be accurate on your decisions is marred as well. Your quickness is also compromised. So you think about these are all little things that are going on. You're not as strong, you're not as accurate, you're not as quick. If you're in life, that can affect you. Decision making and driving. In the gym, that could be dangerous. So there's all, this is why me and Parker are always telling our trainees, you have to get sleep. Because then it also affects our ability to lose weight on many levels, and our ability to gain muscle.
Well, a lot of times it has to do with cortisol too. If you're sleep deprived, a lot of times your cortisol is very high.
Right.
Your cortisol is very high. That's going to cause you to hold on to body fat, because your body's kind of in fight or flight mode, and you're not going to lose the body fat. Your body's actually going to be more predisposed to burning lean body mass, burning muscle mass, instead of burning body fat at that time.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to achieve results in a state of sleep deprivation, elevated cortisol. It's like trying to use a little plastic cup to bail out a boat that's sinking. You know, it's like,
right.
it's you're not going to make any progress.
Right.
You know.
Well, and here's the other one that I want my family to hear right now. Executive functions are impacted by lack of sleep. Choices such as passing the ball or taking it to the net yourself can be more difficult or made too late. So, and this goes into difficulty learning, decision making, right? So this is talking about athletic performance, but I want my family to listen, because I have some kids who like to stay up. And
don't all kids, you know?
Yeah. and it affects their grades and an ability to learn and comprehend and make decisions. So the second one that's really important is, this is a big one. And I read this and it kind of opened my eyes a little bit. I mean, it makes sense, but poor sleeping habits are associated with lack of resistance to illness. Okay, not only illness, but especially the common cold, but also the body, a chronic can not, you have a harder time fighting off disease. So that is a huge one, and people need to understand that. I got a son who stays up late. He's out of high school and, you know, doing that, you know, I'm out of high school thing. I'm an adult. I get home at 1 or 2 in the morning a lot, and he's been getting sick. So it's like, right now I have three members in the house that are sick. I never get sick. I'm around them all the time. I never get sick. You know,
it's maybe like, they'll learn eventually.
I don't know. It's like, it was the other night we were sitting at the dinner table, and my son's like, "Ah, man, I got what mom has," and Caitlin goes, "I think I got it too." And I'm like, I just look at him like, "Yeah, guys, I'm not sick, and I'm not going to get sick." And I always have the joke and say, "I eat viruses for breakfast." So,
well, let me ask you a question then, Matt, because as you were telling that story, I was thinking back to my own experiences a little bit of being a younger, fresh out of high school male. And I worked a job through college waiting tables. And, you know, in that business, you're working evenings and late into the night oftentimes. You know, if the restaurant doesn't close till 11 p.m., something like that, then you gotta clean everything up and close up. Sometimes you're not getting out of there till midnight. You know, you haven't ate in 8 hours, so, you know, you get something to eat, you gotta take a shower, you know, all these things. And I was very frequently not going to bed till, you know, 1 or 2 a.m.
Right.
Throughout college, especially on the weekends. And if I work during the week, it might be, you know, midnight or something. And I didn't really have any issues with getting sick.
Yeah. Now, I think a lot of that is probably youth. I know that when I was in college and I had studios, there was times I slept an hour a day. I mean, I'm not kidding you. I mean, like, I worked through the night. I know I have a class that, like, let's say it's, you know, 7 in the morning. I know I have a 9 o'clock class, so I go ahead and lay down from 7 to 8 to get up, get ready, and go to class. And then I know I get home from that class, and I know I have another class at 11, so I'll go home, sleep an hour, and then go to that class. And then it was not uncommon for that to happen. It wasn't every week, but it was several weeks during the school year. And sickness was not an option for me.
Yeah.
You know.
So maybe we could say that that's something that becomes more important as we get older.
Yes.
Right? You know, when you're young, you may be able to get away with, just like you can get away with less exercise or worse diet when you're younger. You know,
right.
You can't get away with being sleep deprived as you get older.
Well, and I also think that it depends on how many things you're going to throw at the body, right? Is it going to be lack of sleep and lack of nutrition and lack of physical exercise? You know, one of the things we didn't have when I was a kid, you probably had this, but I didn't. We didn't have mobile phones, okay? Or I should say college. So there was not the additional time that's wasted that people spend 8 to 10 hours a day looking at their phones. Didn't exist, okay? So that you remove that component from the equation, I think the health quality of the United States goes up exponentially, because spending time looking at your phone, you can't be doing physical activity.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not moving, and, you know, you're staying up too late looking at your phone and all that kind of thing. I think the compound effect of spending so much time sitting and looking at computers and games and phones, which were not prevalent when I was in college. And don't be making any jokes. I know you're getting ready to get.
He saw me over here smiling.
Yeah.
I was going to say something about the Pony Express when you were growing up, probably. Sitting there waiting.
I could
letters.
See it like stewing. I'm like, oh, man. But the point is that I think the aspect of removing the digital component, because what is the digital component? Why we're all addicted to entertainment, television, phones, is the adrenaline rush we get from it, right? That's why we keep checking it and learning it, and the brain's never shut off. That's exhausting for the brain, you know? That's why no one can remember anything anymore, because they have, you know, so they have way more content that they have to process. I'm just as guilty of it myself. I have things that have popped up on my phone. Let's say, you know, like when, if Facebook or, it's, I think it's just Facebook that does this. Facebook will show something from 5 years ago that I posted, and it'll be a video. And I'll look, and I was like, oh, I'll have to see what that video is I posted. I don't remember it. And I was like, oh, this is pretty good. You know, and it's like, it was almost like the first time I saw it. And I'm like, okay, that's a bad sign. That's a bad sign if I posted that 5 years ago because I thought it was really cool and I don't even remember the video. Or in some of the content, I had completely forgotten about it, right? So that kind of shows you the effect that we have so much content going, and that has a health detrimental effect, you know, on top of it, because it affects our sleep as well.
Yeah, if we're going to take in all this content, we have to be able to process it. That's like the natural function of our brain is to receive content, consume, you know, not just media, phone, whatever, but what we're seeing out in the real world, smelling, hearing, just all that stuff is sensory information,
right,
that we're consuming. And then our brain has to process it and then kind of stores it away. And if you feed too much consumption into the brain without giving it a chance to do its processing, then it's overwhelmed.
Right.
And the time that it then takes to do its processing is when you're trying to sleep, because it has to process this information. And if you get behind on your processing, your body's going to do it when you sit down to go to sleep instead of allowing you to sleep. I found that a long time ago, that just sitting down and taking some, not like meditation from the traditional sense of the word, but just taking some quiet time before bed where I just sat down and just thought, mm-hmm, for a while, mm-hmm, just whatever kind of came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what things that come to mind are things that have been going on that you've been thinking about, your brain knows it needs to think about, like, oh, this thing happened to me today and I didn't really fully think about how that affected me,
right?
Your brain kind of thinks about it. I didn't really think about what decision I should make about this thing. And you sit down and you take some time to process it, and all of a sudden you go lay down to go to bed and you're calm, you're kind of sleepy, your mind's clear, and you just like are out, right?
Right.
But if I'm busy, 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 whether it's on phone or working or something, and I just try to shut it off immediately and go to bed, my mind's running, my brain's running, and it's hard to shut it off and fall asleep. It may take me a couple hours to fall asleep. And that's been one of the most important things that I've learned, is having that wind down time, having that processing time, clearing my mind before I try to go to sleep. Because if I don't, I won't go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So that leads right into what we call creating an environment to sleep in, right? So I have a list of things here that this study suggests. You know, your sleeping space should be a dark, cool place with little to no noise. Your sleep environment should be used only... Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't see that coming. Should be only used for sex and sleep. Sorry. That's kind of funny. Okay. And then secondly, so that's interesting, because for the longest time, I fought having the TV in my room.
You fought it, did you say?
Yeah. I fought, like, I don't want a TV up in my room, you know. And just in the, and my wife always wanted one, right? And so then about a year and a half ago, or maybe 2 years ago, I finally relented and said, fine, put it in here. And we watched it a couple times, but we never turned it on. So it's in our room, but I never, very rarely, maybe once in, you know, and probably I've watched TV on there maybe once in the last 6 months, you know. What ends up happening is that me and Mom are downstairs and the kids want to watch something else, so they go up to our room. But that's interesting because I find TVs in the room are not an ideal situation for kids. We never allowed it in with our kids.
No, I mean, I've never had a bedroom with a TV in it before, nor will I ever. I'm pretty anti, like, technology in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. I think that can cause a problem. Like, I keep my cell phone, you know, I keep it in the room because of the alarm. You know, I have to have an alarm to get myself up a lot of times. If I don't need the alarm to get me up the next day, I will not even keep my cell phone in the room. But I will keep it across the room, kind of as far as I can for myself. No other TVs, other electronics in the room whatsoever. Lights, like I said, no lights at all in the room. And even using blackout curtains, which if you're way out in the country where there's like no lights, you probably don't even need a blackout curtain. But if you're kind of in the city and there's like houses around and there's dawn to dusk lights outside and, you know, you have a little bit of light coming in your window, get a blackout curtain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like it so dark in my room that, like, I couldn't even see my hand in front of my face. That's when they say dark, like, that's how dark it should be.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I have, as I've gotten older, I appreciate the nightlight. I don't know why.
Interesting.
Yeah. I used to, you know, sleep when it was pitch black out, but, or pitch black in the room, but I'd like, I want to turn a nightlight on.
Well, I've always noticed too, I sleep better when it's closer to a new moon than I do on a full moon.
Hence why we probably should all be sleeping at night.
Well, and sleeping with less light, because a full moon is going to emit a lot more light.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So they have a few other suggestions here, and I'll get your take. And this, we kind of already talked about this, but stay away from electronics in the hours before the bedtime.
What I think, not only staying away from them, like, in your room while you're sleeping or at bedtime. Also, give yourself a wind down period of a couple hours. And I would say not just electronics, but light in general. One of the things I hate the most is bright lights at night or before I go to bed. Like, if you got the light on in the room and it's just super bright and I'm about ready to go to bed, like, I hate it.
Yeah.
Once it gets dark for the night, I like to keep me, you know, like, maybe lamps on and dull lights, or kind of where you're not just blasted by this fluorescent light.
Yeah.
Because that affects things as well. So, and the same thing with phones is, you know, a phone screen or laptop screen or whatever, that's light too, coming right at your eyes. And so that's having a significant effect too on keeping your body from winding down and going into that get ready to sleep mode.
Yeah. Well, ironically, this next one says, and it makes me think of red light therapy, you know, because red light's good for us. There's a new device out there that's called Firefly, and it shoots different levels of light into the body and actually cures, like, bacteria in the gut. So here it says that the blue light that comes off your devices can affect your circadian rhythm. So it seems that color in the light has a significant effect on our body.
Oh, 100%.
Which is pretty fascinating. Okay, so then you need to have a wind down routine, like reading, taking a bath, meditation, you know, something that helps relax you to go to sleep. Now, I've been trying, I've toyed around with the noise, like blue noise, brown noise, Have you ever heard of those things?
White noise.
I've
always done white noise.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I don't remember when I started that, but it's been like a few years. And I've done white noise in my bedroom while I sleep every single night. And the main reason that I do that is because when there's silence, then you like hear the little things, you know,
yeah.
Like there's a car horn going off outside or, you know, whatever little things going on. Maybe it's storming. But if I run a box fan, right, on kind of a low to medium speed, and it's just creating a constant white noise, I don't really hear the little other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's the little things that shouldn't bother me aren't going to bother me.
So fan noise is considered a white noise?
Yeah. Like okay. A constant kind of white noise.
Yeah. So
that's what I thought anyway.
I wouldn't know. I just know that my wife's had a fan on for all 30 years of our marriage.
Interesting. Yeah. So yeah. you don't know what it's like without it, though?
No, I don't. I hate the fan. She has it turned at an angle that, because I don't like wind blowing on me, you know?
Yeah. And well, we don't like blow at us.
What's that?
We don't blow at ourselves.
Right.
It just like is there for noise.
Well, for her, it's at her.
Okay.
Yeah. She likes wind on her. If my wife could walk around with fans attached to her all day long, she would. And I'm in like every time we're in the TV room, if she has to have the ceiling fan on, I move across the room because I don't want the ceiling fan on me. And, but I've spent the last 3 decades of my life with that fan on every single night. In fact, I can't remember a night that we didn't have it on. So when it turns off, I'm like, wakes me up because I'm used to hearing it.
Like if the power goes out or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wakes me up like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, something's different.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty crazy. Okay. So another one is, get out of bed if you can't fall asleep after 20 minutes of trying. Do a quiet activity in another space until you feel sleepy. I've done this.
You know, I have because I've read the same thing and I've thought, okay, you know, like I need to, I shouldn't just keep laying there if I can't fall asleep. So I've tried that a few times and I don't think it works any better.
It does for me. I've been able.
So what do you do?
I'll either, I don't know. Like there's sometimes I'll just like put my feet in warm water. I'll fill the bottom of the tub up with like 2 or 3 inches of just, you know, slightly not boiling hot, not lukewarm, but just kind of warm water and just kind of sit there a minute with my feet in the water. And it makes me sleepy, and then I get in bed.
Interesting. That's not something I've ever tried.
Yeah. So I don't know what it is, but warm water relaxes me. Here's a good one. Avoid overtraining. Keep a constant training schedule so you are not overexerting yourself. Well, give me an example of what overexerting yourself or overtraining would be.
Well, let me tell you a story.
Okay.
Right, because I have a very personal story about this type of experience. When I was, I was probably like 20, 21, 22, something like that. But it was when I was at my strongest,
mm-hmm.
Before I knew you.
Yeah.
And I was very intense about it, and I hadn't ever experienced anything like overtraining before, and so I didn't really understand what it was. I just thought, the more you work out, the stronger you get, right? And I was working out like 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, and lifting some incredibly heavy, taxing weights
mm-hmm.
on my body. And then I developed like insomnia or something, I think, because I was working out so intensely, pushing my body so hard, my cortisol levels were so high, I was having trouble sleeping. Well, then that just started compounding the problem because I work out super hard, push my body super heavy weights. Then when I, you know, that cortisol, and I was doing it in the evening, and that cortisol caused me to not be able to sleep very good.
Right.
Well, then now that I'm sleep deprived, I'm just overtraining myself and digging myself even deeper of a hole by working out hard again the next day. And then it just like, it was this problem where it just got worse and worse and worse. And then eventually I like got sick, and then I just kind of took some time off from the gym and recovered, and then it was better again. But
right.
it was like getting really bad there for a while. Like,
yeah.
I couldn't sleep. So I would say, you know, anytime you're adding stress to your body, you're raising your cortisol levels, you're going to potentially hurt your sleep. Just pay attention. Like, if you find that your sleep is getting significantly worse and you are pushing yourself physically to high stress situations, you need to, you know, like reevaluate that and pull back on that a little bit.
Right.
I don't think the average person is in danger of like overtraining themselves.
Right. I agree.
But if you are somebody who's training really intensely for a certain event or certain milestone, certain goal, you know, you might.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a marathon runner that's running way too many miles a day, or a lifter that's lifting way too heavy, you know, every single day of the week and not giving their body any rest. That's a, you know, that can happen. You can definitely get overtrained in a situation like that.
Well, I think we both know someone who probably does that. There's someone here that we both know that this morning they ran 25 miles.
Yeah. And 20. Then jumped into a core and cardio hit circuit class.
If she listens to this, she'll know that we're talking about her. And my concern with her is, like, it's going to be very difficult to build muscle mass when you're running 25 miles a day.
Oh, yeah. At that point, your goal is not to put on muscle mass.
No.
Because, like, you're doing that for different reasons.
Yeah. So, but she wants I had a conversation with her several months ago, and she goes, I want to build muscle mass. I was like, you ain't going to build muscle mass as long as you're putting in, you know, I mean, think about it. You're doing like, over 100 miles a week. Okay. That's, I mean, you know, you think me and Parker, when we've lifted our heavy weights, that's a very small percentage of society. It's a very small percentage of society that run 25 miles a day.
Yeah, 25 miles a day. I don't even know if I ran 25 miles in the last year.
You know, I haven't done it in the last 3 years. I used to run about 50 miles a week, but, you know, 25 miles in a day, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of concerns on top of that. One is you're not going to be able to build muscle mass. Two, you know, there is a concern about percentage body fat being too low. Three, there is the issue of wear and tear on the joints. You know, there's a lot going on there that and when you lose muscle mass, you open yourself up to other issues.
I will say this, though. Nothing will quite help me get a good night's sleep like a good cardio session.
Yes.
Early in the day. I found if I do like a late morning cardio session, intense cardio session, when it comes to that night, I feel relaxed, I feel calm, and I usually get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly why that is, but I found that to be true.
Well, we don't have to... We have to ask, her name's Angel. We'd have to ask Angel if, because I know she's getting here at 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
and running before I think she's a school teacher. And I think she's getting here at 3:30 a.m. in the morning, and she's running, I don't know, 10 to 20 miles before she even goes into school. And I knew why she'd run that. She admitted that to me, it's therapy. Right. Sometimes when we do something very, very well, it relaxes us. It's like an adrenaline rush. It's good for her brain.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to think about the other ramifications and see if you can find other ways to do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it depends on your goals. If your goal is to be able to run those really long races, then that's kind of what you got to do.
Right.
But.
Next one, avoid training and competitions too early and too late. These can affect sleep quality and quality, especially if the athletic schedule is inconsistent. So it's basically talking about the time of the event.
Well, I think too late, definitely. I have, and I know some people are fine with this, and if you're fine with it and you're getting good quality sleep, then go right ahead. But I'm not going to be working out past probably 6, 7 p.m.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. Now, if I'm going to do something that's a little bit lighter intensity, maybe, but I'm not going to do a very intense workout at 7 p.m., especially in the wintertime when it's dark out already. Because that, I know, disrupts my sleep.
Right. Yeah. Keep naps brief. And if you take them at all, naps should be no more than an hour and not taken after 3 p.m. I found that interesting.
I would say that's... I only really have one period of time where I went through this type of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was... when I first started becoming a trainer and I was getting up at 4 every morning to train, I hadn't done that before in my life. And I did good at first because it was like summertime or springtime or whatever. And, you know, you have a lot of daylight and just I always have more energy in the summer. I don't know exactly why, but I was doing just fine. No big deal. But like when wintertime came, it was rough.
Mm-hmm.
Doing 4 a.m., 5 days a week.
Yeah, how long did you do that for?
It was probably about a year.
You did that for a year?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
And then I dropped off a day, like one of those days or two of those days or something, and went down
right.
like 3 days a week doing it, which is not bad. But when I was doing that, I was getting there by 5, and then I was leaving at like noon, 1 o'clock, you know, somewhere in there. But like I'd come home and I'd eat, and then it was maybe like 2, do a little work, do a little something I needed to do, and then I'm starting to get really tired. So it's like 3 maybe, and I'm like, oh, I gotta lay down for a nap.
Yeah.
And I lay down for a nap at like 3 o'clock.
Right.
And then, you know, I don't set an alarm or anything, and I wake up and it's like 5:30. And in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
And so it's like dark already.
Mm-hmm.
And I wake up from my nap and then I'm like, well, so then I can't fall asleep when I should be going to sleep at 9 o'clock, you know, and I can't fall asleep till 10, 11, whatever. And then I got to get before the next morning. And so, yeah, I went through a pretty bad cycle in my sleep schedule at that time. And that's one of the things I kind of learned was even if I'm tired, I don't usually take naps because I know it's going to cause problems with my sleep that night.
Yeah. I try to keep my naps at a bare minimum. So a lot of times I don't take naps usually. Every once in a while, I'll take a nap around, it's usually around 2:30 to 3. And that's when when I have a 5 a.m. client, that's when I usually will be taking a nap in the afternoon. You know, I don't have any 5 a.m. clients right now. So I'm usually getting here about... between, you know, sometimes 7 a.m. to 8 a.m.
Yeah.
So this last one is a good one. And this is something I've learned to deal with at my old age, and maybe you've learned it already. So I've had a lot of stressors in my life. And in past time when I've experienced stress earlier in my life, I'd be up thinking about it. Like, what am I going to do? How am I going to, mind my way through this situation? But as I gotten older and experienced, life never ceases to have stress.
Yeah.
That has helped me to be more, tomorrow's a new day. The sun comes up. We have another chance, right? As long as I'm breathing, I'm fighting, right? So, you know, so that is something that's helped me is just life itself, you know, going through is like, you know, if you attack this thing that's causing you stress, it will go away, right? Over time, you know, it might not be easy. It might get harder, but you just be consistent with it. And that's helped me sleep better, even if I have a very stressful situation going on, there's nothing I can do about it at that moment, you know, and it's only going to get worse if I don't sleep.
Yeah.
So, and that's something I try to, you know, help the kids understand. It's like, I know you got a big test tomorrow. You've been studying for it. The best thing you can do is get some sleep because you'll do better.
Yeah.
Right. Because if you, you know, if you don't know it by now, the night before, you ain't gonna, you know, you're not gonna, it's gonna be hard to retain between now and, you know, a 10 a.m. test. So, but anyway, the point is like, you know, with the lack of sleep, the stress only gets worse.
Yeah. I think for me, learning to compartmentalize, I think compartmentalize is a term people use for it. It's like being able to just kind of like put something in a box, close the box up and shove it away and know that you can open that box back up when you need to, whether it's tomorrow, next week, next month. And that's kind of the thing I've used is I put all my stuff that's been on my mind in compartments and I turn my brain off and go to sleep.
That's something I noticed that you do well. You do compartmentalize. I just know by communicating with you that you have things in boxes and you don't get overly stressed about things, at least not outwardly. You might internalize it, but you have a way of handling, you know, stressful situations and keeping it, you know, from getting out of hand, letting it, keeping it from growing into a bigger problem. So just in communications, because, you know, I've been with you through stressful things, and you're always very even keeled. And I think some of that might be how you were raised, and some of that might just be your temperament.
Well, I will say that I remember growing up, and, you know, I'm maybe a young boy in high school, and I've got things that are stressful, right? Mm-hmm. I've got math tests and football games, and, you know, I mean, there's stuff going on, but it's minor, right, at that time.
Right.
But then I would look at my dad and I would say, man, this dude, all the stuff he has going on, you know, wife, kids, work, you know, having his own business and stuff on the side and being on, you know, this board and this committee and going to these meetings and taking us and doing our games. And I mean, oh my, like, wow. How in the world is he able to handle all this and still be calm and, you know, not overly stressed?
Right.
And I thought about it a lot. I'm like, well, the only way to really do that is that you have to be able to compartmentalize things. Like, you can't carry all that burden all at the same time.
Mm-mm.
You have to kind of be able to handle, when this thing happens, okay, we're handling this. And then when this thing happens, we handle that. And otherwise, though, it gets kind of put in its box and not worried about. And so I knew I had to, like, teach myself to do that, because eventually I knew all those same stresses were going to be on me when I got older. And so,
yeah,
you know, now that as the stresses pile up, oh, you know, you get married and then, okay, now you got a kid and, you know, you're working a job and you got this thing going on the side and then that thing comes up, you know, you just kind of, you keep making your boxes and just like you would file your stuff away in your filing cabinet, you know, it's like, and then whenever you need it, you pull it out the folder and you, you know, you get what you need. But
yeah.
Otherwise it's put away in there.
I think the other one is, or I shouldn't say the other one. Let me reflect on my own. My father was the epitome of calm, like just always under control. Didn't matter what the situation, you know, never, you know, I mean, like 99% of the time he was, no matter the level of heat in the room, he was just this, you know, cool, calm and collected. And so that was one of the things that I think through osmosis, being around that, I got a lot of that and I embraced it more as I got older. Now, my mom, on the other hand, was like theatrical, dramatic. So I got a little bit of that in me too. I've weeded most of that out.
I haven't really seen that come out.
That was more in my 20s and 30s, where I'd let my mom's side come out a little bit, and then I saw how ineffective that is, and, you know, what kind of damage that causes. And then as I got wiser, and my dad really started to come out, and so I definitely have my dad through osmosis, his ability, because you just see how being calm in a situation always renders the situation either neutral or it improves the situation.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. It kind of, if there's other people involved, your calmness kind of rubs off on them.
Right.
You know, you can diffuse situations pretty easily by just remaining calm, right?
Because
if someone else is upset, stressed out, and they feel your calming presence, they kind of realize, oh, maybe this isn't something to be quite this stressed out about, and they kind of begin to come down.
Yeah.
But if you like match their like high stress level, then they just like keep high stress, and next thing you know, you've got a situation where there's conflict.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Stay hydrated.
Yes, I would say staying hydrated is important. I'll pose a question to you,
mm-hmm.
because what do you say to people who they are, you know, like let's say you have a new client,
mm-hmm.
and they've been drinking like a quart of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
You ever have that?
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta say, okay, you need to be up like a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And they start drinking a gallon of water. And then they're telling you, they're like, well, I keep having to wake up and go pee at mm-hmm. night because mm-hmm. I'm drinking all this water.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to that? Because that's an example of staying hydrated actually not helping their sleep.
Mm-hmm. Well, usually that's a symptom of, if it's a guy, and usually that's going to be more of a guy problem. At least that's been my experience, unless the woman has a tiny bladder. You know, guys who get up a lot in the middle of the night, usually that's a prostate issue, right? Most guys can handle drinking a gallon of water, and maybe they have to, like right now I get up one time a night. That's always 3 a.m. I go do my business and I'm back to bed, out. So, you know, I would say there's other things that are probably going on. What has been your experience as far as when you have clients? Has it been mostly male or mostly female?
I would say a mix of both.
Okay.
If anything, maybe a little more female.
Yeah.
But one thing I've noticed is, you know, your body gets into habits. Like you said, it's 3 a.m. every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why is it 3 a.m. every morning that you have to get up and go pee?
Yeah.
It's because that's what your body's used to.
Yeah.
And so it's going to keep doing it.
Right.
And I've had that problem too, where I'm getting up at the exact same time every night to go pee, whatever time it is. And your body's just going to keep doing that until you figure out how to break it of that habit.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because now I don't get up to go pee at all in the night. Every once in a while, maybe if I have had very different habits the day before, I drink a bunch of water that I don't normally drink right before bed, or I ate certain foods that I don't normally eat, and I went to bed at a different time. If I throw my rhythm off, sometimes I will, but I don't have like a daily get up in the middle of the night. I used to, though.
Yeah.
And I kind of had to break my body of that. One of the things that, and I had to kind of help my dad out with this too a little bit, because he was having that problem. He's like, oh, I always got to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. Well, I was listening to something one time, and they were talking about how your body does not produce urine when you're in deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hypothesized, said, well, if I can get deep sleep, even if I drink water before bed, I won't have to go to the bathroom because my body won't be producing the urine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be true when I went back to getting quality sleep,
mm-hmm.
and I figured out how to do that. I don't get up and go to the bathroom. I don't even need to. even if, but then, you know, once you get up and you get going, then your body produces the urine, and then all of a sudden you need to go.
Well, that I didn't know, but I will say this, is that when I take magnesium, I don't get up.
Exactly, because your body's in deep sleep,
mm-hmm.
and so you're not producing urine.
Yeah, it connected those dots. Yeah.
And then he noticed the same thing. When he improved his sleep quality, he stopped having to get up and go to the bathroom, and even though he had been for decades.
And how did he do that?
Well, for him, it was changing his sleeping position.
Okay.
He sleeps in a recliner chair, not all the way on his back, because he would have a snoring problem if he slept all the way on his back. And so that would snoring problem would keep him from deep sleep. And so then he wouldn't be getting deep sleep. He'd have to go to the bathroom. But now he gets deeper sleep.
So he is sleeping in a recliner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100% of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
For years now.
I'm wondering, you know, that makes me think about those beds that recline. You have two
yeah.
sides that do different things.
Similar. Be a similar concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes I wonder if I would sleep a little bit better if I had a bed that was an incline.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely found that to be true.
Yeah. Well, how long ago did that start?
Oh, a few years ago. You know, or you mean that he started sleeping in a recliner?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was probably 5 years ago, something like that.
5 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. One of the things I told you this, I always put like, I don't feel super thirsty a lot of the times because I put salt in my water.
Yeah.
And every morning, every single morning I start with that. The only time I feel really thirsty is sometimes I'll have a glass of iced tea and it doesn't seem to quench my thirst.
Sweet or unsweet?
Sweet.
Oh, yeah, the sugars.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I have kind of that. I have it's a fairly it's not it's I think it's stevia. It's not, you know, a sugar, but it's one of those things where I was like I have one little cheat and I like sweet tea sometimes when I for with dinner. The other thing is I'm going to start one of the things that I this has nothing to do with our topic, but I'm going to be eliminating carbs towards the evening. Because in research, I'm finding that carbs mitigate muscle protein synthesis during the night.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something I'll be eliminating more at night. Because a lot of times my wife will be like, hey, have some ice cream with me, you know. And, you know, I'll be like, this will be at like, you know, 8:30 at night. I'm like, okay, I'll have a scoop, you know. So.
Well, if you do it right, ice cream shouldn't have a whole lot of carbs in it.
What do you mean by that?
Well, here's the thing. There are, so ice cream, it's in the name, is made with cream.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cream has very, very few amount of carbs in it.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fat,
right.
Mostly, and protein, you know.
Right.
But a lot of ice cream companies will make their ice cream now, not with cream, but with seed oils.
Right.
You got to watch the labeling and the package because you'll read, and instead of having cream as one of the main ingredients, it'll be a type of seed oil
mm-hmm.
that they've turned into basically the sugars. And that's probably going to be a lot more carbs.
Yeah. Well, I promise you what she's buying probably has the carbs in it. But that makes me think. So, so Parker is providing me a gallon of milk, and it was
raw milk,
and let it sit in the fridge on Wednesday, and then on Thursday I scooped all that cream out of there, and I'm telling you what, it was so good.
Would you just drink the cream scoop?
I was sitting there taking spoonfuls of cream. I'm like, oh, this is so good. That is like the cleanest. It was so pure.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was about it. I mean, outside the milk tastes fantastic. It's so pure. It's like, man, that cream is amazing.
It does taste good, but there's a lot of stuff you can do with it, too.
Yeah.
You don't have to
whip
just,
it, right?
Well, you can make it into butter.
Yeah.
You know, you could use it to make ice cream, too.
Yeah. Well, not to get too far off topic, but what do you do with cream to turn it into butter?
You have to, yeah, like whip it.
Whip
it. You ever heard of like the term like butter churn? I don't know. My wife has a stand mixer, and I don't know exactly what she does, but there's a process of running the stand mixer for a very long period of time. It has to churn it for a very long period of time before it turns into butter. But a lot of times it's a older cream. So like she'll take the cream off of the milk and then let the cream kind of age for, I don't know, a couple weeks or something, however long it takes in the fridge, because that makes it more conducive for making butter.
Okay.
You get like buttermilk. I don't know. She knows the whole process of working with that. But there's a lot of stuff you can do with it.
Well, that gallon you gave me?
Yeah.
It was only like a quarter left.
Oh.
Yeah, because Peter, for the longest time, Peter and Caitlin wouldn't drink it because it's too thick. And I forced them last night to take it. And then they went got glass after glass after glass. They were like, I said, I told you.
You're going to be like me pretty soon. You're going to be getting a 3 or 4 gallons a week.
I know. It's, I mean, which makes, you know, I want them to eat healthier. So,
well, there's not much healthier out there than just pure raw milk, healthy raw milk.
I think it was Jeff last, the other day. He goes, what is that in the fridge? And I go, it's raw milk. And I was like, dude, you need to try it. He goes, oh, I let cows drink cow's milk, you know? And I'm like, oh, come on now. Come on. He's like, no, cows drink cow's milk. And I'm like, okay. And I didn't get a chance to go further with him on that, but he was joking around with me. One that is important here is, I don't even see it on here. Well, I'll just say it. Caffeine.
Oh, huge.
Yeah, huge. So you got to watch your caffeine intake, even during the day. You know, and every once in a while, I'll get an Alani or something like that that has 100 milligrams or a Bum Energy, but it's only got 100 milligrams versus 300 or 350 milligrams. And then you have to watch what time of the day you're drinking that.
Yeah. So this is something that I want to talk about. I don't think I've talked about it actually before on this podcast, but so caffeine, you know, your average energy drink or pre-workout, what, maybe 200 milligrams of caffeine in it, something like that. So, you know, it's very common. I think a cup of coffee is 80. So, you know, if you have one cup of coffee, you got 80, two cups, 160, you know, whatever, if you drink coffee. So let's just go off of an average of 200 milligrams of caffeine. Mm-hmm. Now, caffeine, it sticks around in your body for a little bit. It doesn't just come in and then you have 200 milligrams and then boom, it's gone in an hour. It has a half-life. So what that means is that it reduces its effect by half over a certain amount of time. That half-life for caffeine is about 5 hours. So what that means is if you consume 200 milligrams of caffeine in 5 hours, that will reduce by a half. So it'll be about 100 milligrams.
Okay.
And then every 5 hours, it'll reduce by half. So then another 5 hours, it'll be 50. Another 5 hours, 25. On down. But the reason that that's important is because people think, oh, I'm like drinking my caffeine. It's like, it's still a few hours before bed. I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Well, you're still going to have a lot of that hanging around in your system for hours throughout the day. Let's say you have 200 milligrams of caffeine 5 hours before you go to bed. You think, oh, it's fine. I'm not going to bed for 5 hours. It'll be fine. 5 hours later, you go to bed. You still have 100 milligrams in your system. 100 milligrams is more than a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically like drinking a cup of coffee right as you go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same equivalent level of what's in your system. And so keep that in mind whenever you're drinking this caffeine. It's going to stick around in your system for many, many hours, if not almost like a whole day.
Right, right.
And if you're drinking it multiple times a day, every day, you're never getting it out of your system. Because it takes a good probably 15 to 20 hours to reduce down to an insignificant amount. And so if you're having it every day, your body's never getting a break from this caffeine in its system.
Right. Yeah. You know, and that's, I had not heard that. Every 5 hours, it reduces by half. I've always, just by practice, if I'm going to drink any caffeine, it's usually between 1 and 3, and it's usually not over 100 milligrams.
1 to 3 p.m.?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're good, because say you drink it at 3 p.m., that goes down to 50 by 8 p.m., and then, you know, by the time you go to, if you go to bed at like 10, you'd be down to 30 or 40. I mean,
right.
That's like half a cup of coffee. I mean, that's not a
right.
very high amount.
Right. And I've never had, I don't usually have trouble falling asleep, but I drink maybe one of those every couple weeks. And
yeah.
that's usually because the night before I noticed that if I don't sleep well, then I'm like dragging to get through the day. And that's when I usually hit one.
Well, I always tell people, well, I'm this way myself, but I always tell people this too. Zero caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Never do caffeine. Never have caffeine. Caffeine is honestly a drug. It's mm-hmm. addictive like a drug. It has a lot of properties like a drug. It has significant altering effects on your body. I mean, think about the rush that you get from caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
That has a, I mean, that's up there with like some other drugs. And people just treat it like, oh, normal every day. You should just be having it all the time.
Now, Parker, you're going against a lot of well-known health influencers online.
Uh-oh. Don't want to offend the influencers. Well,
no, I'm kidding you. I'm kidding you. But
you're right, though.
Yeah.
A lot of them think caffeine is useful,
mm-hmm.
I guess I would say.
Yeah, that's a good
I don't
way
think
to
it's
it.
Useful. I always tell people, I say, that drink energy drinks. I say if you need an energy drink to get through your day or to get through your workout, mm-hmm. then that means your sleep's not good enough.
No, you're right. 100%.
And, you know,
that.
Like you said, once in a while, if it's just like, hey, my sleep was bad last night and I just want a little something to push through, we've talked about that. Once in a while, nothing is really going to hurt you that bad.
Right.
You know, you can go eat fast food once every so often and it's not going to kill you.
Right.
But if it's a chronic, like everyday problem, that's when it's an issue and that's when you should take it down. But I hold pretty true to zero caffeine ever.
Yeah. And that can be managed. It's about eating healthy, getting good sleep, keeping hydrated. 'Cause when you're not hydrated, you're going to get tired. So, you know, you need that and activity. So those three things, one of the things we can definitely say, you know, now as a trainer, as I said at the very beginning, I'm going to put rest above everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But they all are intertwined. And a lot of these studies would not go out on a limb and they I shouldn't say all of them. I only got through two or three of them with some getting through the content. But the point is that there was a... the most they would come out and say is that they're intertwined, and that is your sleep, your nutrition, and your activity, which is true.
Yeah. And I will say sleep is first, but it's kind of like they all support each other.
They do.
And helping one of those is going to help the other. So yes, better sleep is important for exercise and good nutrition, but also better nutrition and exercise is going to help you sleep better.
Right.
So they all help each other out. So you do want to work on all of them at the same time, but you do need to make some decisions about your sleep before you start on your exercise nutrition regimen if you want to get the maximum benefits. But you also will experience, during improving your nutrition and improving your exercise, you probably will see some sleep improvements as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want you, Matt, you've told me this before, and I know it, but just for the audience out there, if they haven't heard it before, break it down very specifically what this sleep stack is that you have discovered, because I know it's been very effective for you and very effective for other people, so I just want you to be able to drop it out there so anybody can try it out if they'd like to try it out or if they're having trouble sleeping on their own.
Okay, so I have to pull it up because I always forget one of them. Inositol, or am I saying that right? So 1 to 3 grams, it helps you relax, and it helps you get into a deeper sleep. Okay.
And where can you get installed?
You can't. I mean, you could probably buy it in pill form. I haven't looked at like the Hy-Vees, like, you know, but I'm not a big fan of some of the brands they have in the grocery stores. I like taking powders over pills because I can get more powder than I can in a pill. And like, you know, getting 500, like I suggest, you know, 500 milligrams of magnesium. Now, when I do a sleep stack together, I usually will do only 200 milligrams. But if you're going to do magnesium alone, then I would do 500 milligrams. And I do 500 milligrams.
Yeah.
But
so what else besides the
Insitol and glycine?
Glycine.
There we go. 3 grams lowers the body temperature. So then you fall asleep faster and better quality sleep.
Okay. And where would you get glycine at?
So glycine and Insitol, I think both of those are going to be something you're going to have to buy online. That's not something the supplement or the supplement stores aren't going to have those in stock usually. They'll have magnesium, but they usually won't have glycine and Insitol. And then last, this is the one I always forget, is theanine, 200 to 400 milligrams. You know, it helps you focus and sleep. So you take those all four together. I've had people, I don't know anyone, they start with those four, and then what ends up happening is they sleep so deep they don't get up. So so then they end up backing off, which I guess is a good way to see if it's going to work. But a lot of times the people, they try it because they're desperate, right? They want to sleep. And, you know, I always suggest that over taking, you know, petroleum-type drugs. You know, like, what's the famous one that everyone takes?
Melatonin?
No, it's not one the body produces. I can't remember what it's called right now. But anyway, I suggest getting off petroleum drugs and trying something natural like this. And what ends up happening a lot of times, they end up backing off on the amounts or the dosages or remove a couple of them. They kind of experiment, right?
Like, yeah, so. Find what their happy spot is.
Right.
Happy medium is on that.
So, again, that's Insitol, magnesium, glycine.
And what are the dosages again?
So, Insitol, 1 to 3 grams. Magnesium, 200 milligrams if you take it with these. Glycine, 3 grams, and theanine, 200 to 400 milligrams.
And is this like a right before bed type of thing?
Not generally. I could say, you know, if you're taking it around 5 or 6, I think you're good. You don't have to, like, wait until, like, the moment you go to bed, because it's going to take time to get in you, and it has to be, like anything, if you're doing it every day, it'll have more of a compound effect and help you start getting into a rhythm.
Take it, like, with dinner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I have suggested people is, because it's not like it's, again, with petroleum-based medicine, it's like you have to take it 30 minutes before because it'll knock you out, you know. And with this doesn't work that way, you know. It's just when it's time to naturally go to sleep, it helps, you know, it's there to help the brain process and relax the way it's supposed to.
Yeah.
So,
interesting. That's a good thing to try out, because most of those ingredients are
natural.
Pretty natural.
Yeah. Absolutely. So outside of that, you know, I think, you know, the most important thing is, guys, get your sleep. And if you have trouble sleeping, you know, we gave you a lot of suggestions today to change your environment. You know what your triggers are that keep you up. Eliminate the caffeine. And if you really have to, you know, remove electrical devices, you know, from the side of your bed. If you can, if you use your phone, just make sure you have the discipline not to use it. And then you also, you know, you can try a sleep stack that we talked about.
Yeah, also understand it's a process.
Yeah.
Guys, it doesn't happen overnight. If you haven't implemented a lot of these things, you're not going to all of a sudden in one day just completely change your sleep habits.
Right.
So it's a process, small steps. Try a couple of these things at a time, get used to them, try the next things, and eventually, hopefully get your sleep figured out if you haven't, or even if you're already sleeping pretty good, there's no reason why you can't implement some of these and make it a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, guys, this is episode 35.
35, yep. We've done 35 of them. Hopefully, we've got many more to go.
It breaks the 100 number.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
Which was 34.
Well, we're going to keep going on this, guys. Hoping to have some more guests on in the future. It's always always fun to have some guests on, and so when we can get those lined out, we're
well, I, and it's evident by I watch our numbers, and it's always evident by our numbers that people like guests. So we'll work on that, guys.
Yeah, they don't like us anymore.
We talk too much. All right, guys.
Real quick, before we go,
Who are we playing?
I'm gonna lock you down for a Chiefs prediction.
What's
this
week? Who are we playing?
I think it's Atlanta, right? Let me confirm that, but I do believe that the Chiefs are playing the Atlanta Falcons this week. Let's see. Chiefs versus Falcons tomorrow at 7:20 p.m., so Sunday night football. The Chiefs are playing the Atlanta Falcons. What's your prediction, Matt?
Is it at Atlanta Falcons?
Yeah, okay. I would assume so. Two home games already this year.
I'm predicting a 28-25 loss.
Matt, you just have no faith in the Chiefs this year. What is the deal?
I'm trying to be right once.
Oh, I'm taking the other end of the spectrum. I'm going to go. They've had two really close games against pretty good teams. The Falcons are okay, but they're not near as good as the other teams that they've already played.
Yeah.
I think they light the scoreboard up Sunday Night Football in front of a large audience. Give me 37-18 Chiefs.
Wow. Wow. They're going to run over them.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. At home.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, the Chiefs have just, you know, been a little turnover prone in the last, for at least that's probably the last game. So, I don't know. I just want to see them beat every type of situation this year, and then I'll start always picking them.
When we get to the end of the season, we're going to have to do a little compilation of all the wrong guesses.
I know. I might be 0-2. So
we'll see.
All right.
All right. Thanks for joining us, guys, on episode 35. We'll be back next week with another episode for you.
All right. Take care, guys.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.